This thesis can solve a particularly perplexing problem that Davidson helped to bring into focus, that of explaining how it is possible for one to inquire into any empirical issue and to form any empirical beliefs if one takes truth to be objective. Okay, here is the argument at issue. You have it on the handout. If believing that P is believing that it's true that P, if for any empirical proposition P one takes truth or falsity of P to be objective, that is to be independent of what one believes or could believe to be indicated by the evidence one has or could have, and to consist in the non-epistemic fact that things are the way they are said to be in P, then one can never come to believe that it's true that P on the basis of one's evidence that P. Which means, according to one, that one can never come to believe that P on the basis of one's evidence that P. However, it is indisputable that we constantly form beliefs in such a way. For instance, when I perceptually believe that my computer is on my desk or that I wear a watch on my wrist. Therefore, for it to be possible for us to form the beliefs that P on the basis of the evidence that P we have, supposition one or two must be false. Either believing that P isn't believing that it's true that P, or we didn't take the truth or falsity of P to be objective or independent of what we believe or could believe to be indicated by the evidence we have or could have. The problem is that the claim that believing that P is believing that it's true that P is generally thought to be obvious. Furthermore, as a matter of fact, most of those who form empirical beliefs on an evidential basis seem to take the truth of such beliefs to be objective or independent of what they take to be indicated by the evidence. As a consequence, they shouldn't be able to form empirical beliefs on the basis of the evidence they have. But undoubtedly, they do so all the time. So how is this possible? This question has been approached in the contemporary literature through a related problem, that of knowing what nature of inquiry must consist in and what conception of truth one must have for one's inquiry into empirical matters to be possible. Two important paragraphs from Donald Davidson have called attention to this issue, in particular in the pragmatist literature. So he says, truth does not come with a mark, like the date in the corner of some photographs, which distinguishes them from falsehoods. The best we can do is test, experiment, compare, and keep an open mind. But no matter how long we and coming generations keep at it, we and they will be left with fallible beliefs. We know many things, and we learn more. What we will never know for certain is which of the things we believe are true. Since it is neither visible as a target nor recognizable when achieved, there's no point in calling truth a goal. Truth isn't value, so the pursuit of truth is an empty enterprise unless it means only it is often worthwhile to increase our confidence in our beliefs by collecting further evidence or checking our calculations. From the fact that we'll never be able to tell which of our beliefs is true, pragmatists conclude that we may as well identify our best research, most successful beliefs with the true ones and give up the idea of objectivity. But here we have a choice. Instead of giving up the traditional view that truth is objective, we can give up the equally traditional view to which the pragmatists adhere, that truth is a norm, something for which we strive. I agree with the pragmatists that we can consistently take truth to be both objective and something to be pursued. But I think they would have done better to cleave to a view that counts truth as objective, but pointless as a goal. So the problem can be, in my opinion, reconstructed as follows. If inquiring into whether P consists in aiming at forming a true belief on the question of whether P by collecting and evaluating evidence concerning this question, if for any empirical proposition P one takes the truth or falsity of P to be objective, that is to be independent of what one believes or could believe to be indicated by the evidence one has or could have, and to consist in the non-epistemic fact that things are the way they are said to be in P, and if, it's an additional premise, one cannot aim at something if one thinks one will not and will never be in a position to decide whether or not it has been attained, then one cannot aim at forming a true belief in the question of whether P by collecting and evaluating evidence concerning this question. Which means, according to one star, that one cannot inquire into whether P. However, it is indisputable that we constantly carry out inquiries. For instance, when I inquire into whether the weather will be sunny tomorrow or whether a good friend of mine will get the position at King's College for which he applied. Therefore, for it to be possible for us to carry out inquiries, supposition one star or two must be false. Either inquiring into whether P doesn't consist in aiming at forming a true belief on the question of whether P by collecting and evaluating evidence concerning this question, or we don't take the truth or falsity of P to be objective or independent of what we believe or could believe to be indicated by the evidence we have or could have. Even though supposition one star is often thought to be obviously correct, Davidson rejects it, contrary to pragmatists like Richard Rorty, who instead chooses to reject two, that is, to epistemicize or accessibilize truth. For Davidson, truth is objective, in the sense indicated in two, but it is not something we pursue and for which we strive in our inquiries. When we inquire into whether P, we aim at something that we will be in a position to decide whether or not has been attained, justified, rational, or well-grounded belief. Here, Rorty and Davidson do not significantly disagree. They both accept this idea, and also the decisive premise A, which grants the inference from one star and two to three star. The main difference between Rorty and Davidson is just that the former holds contrary to the latter, that for the notion of truth to be intelligible, truth shouldn't be distinguished from what we pursue when we inquire into something. Rorty also emphasizes that if A is accepted, as he claims it should be, along with Davidson, it follows that the kind of justified belief we aim at when we inquire into whether P isn't a belief whose justification depends on factors or criteria, whose satisfaction is independent of our judgments on this issue. If, for example, an agent conceives of justification in terms of truth conduciveness, where truth is objective in the sense indicated in two, or in terms of acceptability in ideal conditions, or in ideal epistemic circumstances, it follows that she is no more in a position to judge of a given belief whether it has the epistemic property of being justified than she is in a position to judge whether it is objectively true. This means, if A is correct, that she cannot aim at having beliefs that are justified in this sense. One can aim at having justified beliefs only if this means having rational beliefs and if, as Cheryl Mizak remarks, there is no gap between what we take after careful consideration to be rational and what is rational, between what is and what is taken to be the best belief given the current state of inquiry. What then are the available options for proving false the clearly unacceptable conclusions 4 and 4 star? If premise 2 is not to be abandoned, and if the inference from 2 to 3 is, as it appears to be, valid, it follows that 3 is correct. Because 3, when combined with 1, directly implies 4, the only way to prove that 4 is false is therefore to prove that 1 is false. Similarly, assuming that A is correct, if premise 2 isn't to be abandoned, and if the inference from 2 and A to 3 star is, as it appears to be, valid, it follows that 3 star is correct. And because 3 star, when combined with 1 star, directly implies 4 star, the only way to prove that 4 star is false, under the assumption that A is correct. So the only way to prove that 4 star is false is therefore to prove that 1 star is false. While premise 1 and 1 star are generally thought to be obviously correct, it can be shown by relying on some, I would say, decisive but strangely neglected remarks by Frank Ramsey that can be found in Untruth that they should be rejected. And in the following section, I shall put forward the basis of these remarks. On the basis of these remarks, a Ramseyan solution to the problem of escaping the unacceptable conclusions 4 and 4 star, and defend this solution against some possible objections. So, when 1 and 1 star are denied, they are often replaced by 1 prime, believing that P is believing that it's probably true, or likely to be true that P. Or by, and for the second premise, 1 star, inquiring into whether P consists in aiming at forming a justified or well-grounded belief on the question of whether P by collecting and evaluating evidence concerning this question. Davidson, in the passage quoted above, explicitly endorses this version of the premise. The idea that believing that P is believing that it's probably true or likely to be true that P, for its part, is usually thought to express our awareness of our doxastic fallibility and to be more compatible than one with our doxastic life being seemingly largely composed of varying degrees of belief rather than of full beliefs. Okay, and it's not in my intention in this talk to directly argue against these two premises, but to show how it is possible from a Ramseyan perspective to reject 1 and 1 star without having to endorse the two premises just mentioned, or something along the lines of these two premises. And I shall simply say here, contra Davidson, that if inquiring into whether P involves wanting or pursuing something, it seems rather implausible to claim that what is pursued isn't to know the truth about whether P, but rather which belief that P or that not P it would be justified to have on this issue. It could also be remarked that beliefs like my current perceptual belief that I wear a watch on my wrist do not easily fit with the idea that when it comes to empirical issues, believing that P is always believing that it's likely or very likely to be true that P. That I wear a watch on my wrist is certainly not something whose truth is highly likely for me. It is something of which I'm absolutely certain, even though I take the truth or falsity of my perceptual belief to be independent of what I believe to be indicated by the evidence I have. That is, even though I take this evidence to be logically compatible with the falsity of my belief. So the problem posed by arguments 1 to 6 and 1 star to 6 star can be summarized in the following way. If truth is what we aim at in inquiring into something and what is judged attained in forming a belief, it cannot be that we take the truth of our beliefs to be independent of what we believe to be indicated by the evidence we have and to consist in the non-epistemic fact that things are the way they are believed to be. Because if this were so, we would never be able to form a belief nor inquire into anything, which is indisputably not the case. But in short, if one is judged correct, two must be rejected in order to escape the unacceptable conclusion 4, since the inferences from 2 to 3 and from 1 and 3 to 4 appear to be valid. Similarly, if 1 star is judged correct, and if it is assumed that A is 2, 2 must be rejected in order to escape the unacceptable conclusion 4 star, since the inference from 2 star and A to 3 star and from 2 star and A to 3 star and from 1 star and 3 star to 4 star appear to be valid. According to this line of thought, for it to be possible for an agent to inquire into whether P and to believe that P, the truth she seeks when she inquires into whether P, and that she judges to have found when she believes or judges that P, cannot consist for her in the non-epistemic fact that things are the way she judges them to be. She has to have an epistemicized conception of truth. As Ramsey remarks, this is what the partisan of the coherent theory of truth can seemingly plausibly say, oppose to defenders of truth as correspondence. The truth we can seek and judge to have found in judging or believing that P should consist in the coherence of this belief or judgment with others we have formed and to which it can be compared. He says, if I make a judgment and claim that it's true, this cannot be because I see that it corresponds to a fact other than itself. I don't look at the judgment and the fact and compare them. The fact as I see it is simply my judgment, and all I can test it by is my other judgments. When I turn, I'm bound by the circle of my own. Wherever I turn, I'm bound by the circle of my own ideas, and the truth I seek cannot consist in a relation between them and something outside, but must lie inside the system of my beliefs, not in a relation between them and an unknowable reality. Truth, therefore, in any sense in which we can know ourselves to possess it, must be immanent, and this immanent standard must be coherence and comprehensiveness, for this is the test we all employ. The problem, then, is that if it is maintained that the view of truth held by ordinary inquirers and believers is that a statement or a judgment is true when things are the way they are stated or judged to be, and not when the statement or judgment entertains a certain relation with certain other statements or judgments, the possibility of belief and inquiry has not been accounted for. However, this problem, according to Ramsey, constitutes, he says, an entirely illusory difficulty, because premises 1 and 1 star should both be rejected. Believing that P doesn't consist in believing that it's true that P, and inquiring into whether P doesn't consist in aiming at forming a true belief on the question of whether P. For Ramsey, this is because the concept of truth doesn't intervene in one's believing that P, nor in one's inquiring into whether P at all. He says, it is a fundamental mistake to suppose that in our thinking, except when we are specifically thinking about thought, we use the idea of truth at all. We do not set up truth as a standard and ask ourselves, are my thoughts about the earth true? Do they correspond to fact? We simply ask, what is what? For instance, is the earth flat? And when we try to find out whether the earth is flat, the nature of truth is irrelevant, for we are concerned with the nature of the earth, not with that of our thought. To know the nature of truth couldn't possibly help us. For truth is strictly a property of beliefs, and what we want are tests not for the properties of beliefs, but for the properties of the things we are studying. The argument we are trying to refute is that when we decide that the earth is round, we are not judging that our belief corresponds to a fact, but rather that it is the only one which is coherent with our beliefs about ships disappearing below the horizon, etc. The truth which we suppose our belief to have must therefore consist not in correspondence with fact, but in coherence with other beliefs. The mistake lies, as we've seen, in supposing that in judging that the earth is round, we are thinking about beliefs at all. Neither our final judgment that the earth is round, nor our initial beliefs that ships disappear, etc., are objects of our thought at all. We are not thinking about our own thinking, but about ships disappearing and the earth being round. If coherence comes into our thought at all, it is the coherence of reality, not the coherence of our beliefs. Well, in these two paragraphs, Ramsey clearly attacks the idea that believing that P consists in believing that it's coherent with one's other beliefs, that Q and R, for instance. While for him, it consists in believing that it's being the case that P curries with it being the case that Q and R. The problem is that it is often mistakenly thought that Ramsay, by doing so, intends to defend the idea that believing that P rather consists in believing that the proposition that P corresponds to what is the case, since he also claims that his view about truth, stating that to believe truly is to believe that P and P, belongs undoubtedly to the class of correspondent theories. But in actual fact, Ramsay is more radical. He attacks the idea that believing that P consists in believing that it's true that P, where truth might be coherence, correspondence, or any other conception of truth one could put forward. Okay. His argument for this claim can be restated in this way. Believing that P cannot consist in believing that it's true to believe that P. Moreover, because we're not thinking about our own thinking at all when we believe that P or inquire into whether P, but about what is what, and because truth is a property of our thoughts, it follows that the idea of truth doesn't intervene in our believing that P and inquiring into whether P. Hence, believing that P doesn't consist in believing that it's true that P. But Ramsay states the rather obvious first part of the argument as follows. He says, we cannot claim truth for our judgments when making them, for if we did, our judgment would be about itself. But if it were possible to have a judgment which was about itself, we could have a judgment which said itself was false, and such a judgment would be true, if false and false if true, and so both true and false, and neither true nor false, which is impossible. Correlatively, it can be remarked that judging that a judgment is true requires the latter judgment to have been formed prior to its being judged true, and so cannot be identical to it. More generally, judging that P cannot consist in judging anything about this very judgment. For instance, that it's true, that justified and isolable by doubt, or that it amounts to knowledge. Because logically, one has to be subsequent to the other. Judging that P is not ruling out what is epistemically achieved by judging that P. The second part of Ramsay's argument relies on the difference there is between believing that something is the case and believing that something is true. What is believed to be the case when it is believed that it is the case that P, for instance, that there are roses in the garden, is not something that can be true or false. Truth or falsity is, strictly speaking, a property of propositions. That is a property of what is stated in a statement, conjectured in a hypothesis, believed in a belief, and so on. And obviously, it is not a proposition that is believed to be the case when it is believed that it's the case that there are roses in the garden. Rather, it is a certain state of affairs, there being roses in the garden, that is believed to be the case. More generally, state of affairs can obtain or not, but that cannot be true or false. Okay. This, however, even if combined with the uncontroversial claim that believing that it's the case that P is nothing other than believing that P, doesn't exclude in itself the believing that there are roses in the garden consists in believing that it's true that there are roses in the garden. It only excludes that it consists in believing that it's true that the proposition that there are roses in the garden obtains. In other words, it doesn't exclude that truth intervenes in one's believing that there are roses in the garden, because it doesn't exclude that believing that something is the case consists in believing that it's true that something is the case. Okay. However, if we also admit, as Ramsay does in the passages in question, that believing that something is true involves having compared the way the word is to the way it is stated, conjectured, believed, and so on to be, which is, after all, an intuitive idea, then for a belief that something is true to be possible, it is necessary for another belief about the way the word is to have been previously formed. Now, if this latter belief also consisted in believing that something was true, an infinite regress would loom, because this belief would also have to be grounded on a prior belief about whether or not the world is such that the thing in question is true. A belief that would itself have to be grounded on a prior belief about whether or not, and so on, ad infinitum. Therefore, for it to be possible to form, as we indisputably do, beliefs that something is true, it is necessary for there to be beliefs that something obtains or is the case that do not involve or consist in believing that something is true. In these beliefs, which are about what is what, and more generally about what obtains in the world, the idea or concept of truth doesn't intervene at all. They do not involve or consist in deciding, even tacitly, the truth value of anything. Okay, let's put aside for a moment the objections that could be raised against this line of reasoning and its conclusion, and first draw its consequences. If Ramsay's view is correct, it follows that it's unnecessary to reject premise two, that we ordinarily take the truth of or falsity of empirical proposition to be objective, in order to escape the unacceptable conclusion four. Even if the inferences from 2 to 3 and from 1 and 3 to 4 are valid, the fact that premise 1 can be challenged allows us to rationally avoid 4. There's no need to argue that the truth of P cannot but consist for the one who formed the belief that P in the satisfaction of some evidential criteria conditions. And this, she cannot take truth to be objective, because objective truth cannot consist in the satisfaction of evidential conditions, since there cannot be evidence that the proposition that P is not only supported by the evidence, but not false while supported by the evidence. In other words, forming the belief that P doesn't require believing that, that some evidential conditions are satisfied, which are those under which it is true that P. Okay. Well, another noteworthy consequence of this Ramsayan solution to the problem of the possibility of belief is that, if it is correct, we should reject the claim that belief has a constitutive epistemic aim, whether it is truth or knowledge or justification. Because if believing that P is to be distinguished from believing that it's true, unknown or justified to believe that P, this implies that in believing that P, one doesn't constitutively aim at having a belief with a certain epistemic status. This view doesn't imply in any way, however, that there's no norm of belief, nor that this norm can be truth, knowledge, justification. Okay. And this Ramsayan solution to the problem of the possibility of belief applies ceteris paribus to the problem of the possibility of inquiring into whether P. If truth is taken to be objective, and that this entails that one cannot aim at forming a true belief on the question of whether P by collecting and evaluating evidence concerning this issue, it doesn't follow that one cannot inquire into whether P. This is so because it can be argued that inquiring into whether P doesn't consist in aiming to form a true belief on the question of whether P. In other words, even if the inferences from 2 and 8 to 3 star and from 1 star and 3 star to 4 star are valid, it is possible to escape 4 star without rejecting 2 or A, because we are not rationally compelled to accept 1 star. I think I won't have time to develop this point about inquiry, and so I will only say a few words about the objections that could be raised against the Ramsayan view I have indicated. Okay, two objections now. The Ramsayan solution to the problem of the possibility of belief is, in a nutshell, that because ordinary beliefs, such as the belief that there are roses in the garden, do not consist in believing that something is true, one's conception of truth cannot prevent one from forming such beliefs. If believing that there are roses in the garden consisted in believing that it's true that there are roses in the garden, forming such a belief would require, as we've seen, not having an objective conception of truth. An intuitive objection to this Ramseyan view is that, supposing it has the means to account for the possibility of beliefs like the belief that there are roses in the garden, it certainly cannot account for another kind of ordinary belief, beliefs in which truth is predicated of something. For instance, the belief that Mary's belief that there are roses in the garden is true. After all, since the basis of the Ramseyan solution to the problem of the possibility of belief is to show that truth doesn't intervene in one's belief that there are roses in the garden, this solution doesn't seem to be of any help when it comes to explaining this. How, if one takes truth to be objective, is it possible to form beliefs in which truth is predicated of statements, beliefs, hypotheses, cases, and so on? As argued in the inference from 2 to 3, it is not possible to form the belief that, given what is indicated by the evidence, the proposition P is objectively true, because something being objectively true is independent of what one believes or could believe to be indicated by the evidence one has or could have. Or to put it another way, because this would require impossible evidence indicated that P is not only supported by the evidence, but not false while supported by the evidence. As a consequence, it seems that unless one of the following two positions is adopted, it cannot be explained or it is possible to form, as we indisputably do, beliefs like the belief that Mary's belief that P is true. Either when Mary's belief is believed to be true, either it is, in actual fact, believed to be very likely to be objectively true, or it is not believed to be objectively true. That is, truth is not taken in believing that Mary's belief is true to be objective. Okay. Another objection is that since those who, due to their believing that P, agree that P, also unhesitatingly agree that it's true that P, true that P when asked whether this is so, provided it possesses the concept of truth. And since they're agreeing that P and they're agreeing that it's true that P clearly both seem to directly and immediately follow from one and the same doxastic attitude, they are believing that P, it follows that in believing that P, it is believed that it's true that P. Okay, that's the second objection. Hence, it shouldn't be claimed that because forming the belief that there are roses in the garden doesn't consist in forming the belief that this is true, it is possible for one to form, while having an objective conception of truth, ordinary empirical beliefs such as the belief that there are roses in the garden. The principle of a Ramseyan answer to these two objections can be found in the following passage, which is in line and complements the long extract quoted in the previous section. Ramsey says, "The earth is round. It is true that the earth is round. Anyone who believes that the earth is round believes truly." It is really obvious that these statements are all equivalents. No, the first statement of the three doesn't involve the idea of truth in any way. It simply says that the earth is round. In the second, we are thinking not merely that the earth is round, but that because it is round, anyone who believes or says that it is round believes or says truly. We have passed from the first of our statements to the third, but the third amounts in a sense to no more than the first, and it is merely the first thought of in connection with the possibility of someone saying or believing it. To take a parallel case, we can say simple, the weather in Scotland was bad in July, or we can think of the fact that of that fact in reference to its possible effect on one of our friends and say instead, if you were in Scotland in July, you had bad weather. So too, we can think of the earth being round as a possible subject of belief and say, if you think the earth is round, you think truly. And it amounts to no more than the earth as the quality you think it has when you think it is round, that the earth is round. Ramsey's main point here is that believing that Mary's belief or statement that P is true doesn't require, in addition, both possessing the concept of truth and to believing that Mary states or believes that P, or having formed any doxastic attitude other than believing that P. Okay. More precisely, believing that Mary's statement or believe that P is true doesn't require believing that, given what is indicated by the evidence, this statement is objectively true. A belief that, once again, cannot be formed because this would require impossible evidence that P is not only supported by the evidence, but not false while supported by the evidence. Forming the belief that Mary's statement is true is simply thinking of what one believes to obtain, that P, in connection with Mary stating that P. In other words, this is simply believing that since P, Mary's statement that P is true. And coming to believe that P on the basis of one's evidence consists in taking the things one is aware of as indicating that P, not in taking them to establish the objective truth of the proposition that P. As a result, neither of the two objections mentioned above really constitute an issue for the Ramseyan solution to the problem of the possibility of belief. This solution can account for the possibility of forming beliefs that something is true while having an objective conception of truth. And the fact that one's believing that it's true that P directly follows from one's believing that P doesn't necessarily imply that something is believed to be true in believing that P. Okay. Another consequence is that Ramsey would reject a Frege-inspired content redundancy theory, according to which there is no difference in content between the assertion of or belief that P and the assertion of belief that it's true that P, because nothing is added to the content of the assertion or belief that P when truth is explicitly predicated of the proposition that P. This being due to the fact that this proposition is already thought to be true in one's asserting or believing that P. And this is a theory that Frege is often sought to endorse when he claims that the sentence, "I smell the scent of violets," has just the same content as the sentence, "It is true that I smell the scent of violets." So it seems that nothing is added to the thought by my ascribing to it a property of truth. Correlatively, Ramsey would also reject what Mark Calderon has called the transparency of truth. That is, the idea that if we possess the concept of truth, then in asserting, believing, inquiring after the proposition expressed by S, we assert, believe, inquire after the proposition expressed by its true that S. Okay, it could be argued that, Ramsey could say that, of course, we can always reflexively realize that one is not and will never be in an epistemic position to believe that something is, given one's evidence, objectively true. But only to believe that something is, given one's evidence, very likely to be true, considering, for instance, the possibility that one finds oneself in a locally or globally misleading environment. To put it another way, one can always reflexively realize that since P, Mary's statement that P is true, is and can only be an expression of one's take on the way things are, which doesn't put one in an epistemic position to decide whether or not Mary's statement that P is objectively true, since this requires comparing it to the way things are, not to the way one or someone takes them to be. However, realizing this won't prevent one from coming to believe that this statement is true, because by believing that P, one finds oneself, when considering the statement that P, rationally committed to believing that it's true that P, and psychologically compelled to do so. In other words, thanks to the nature of belief, epistemological lessons about the impossibility of being entitled to believe that, given the evidence, something is objectively true, necessarily come too late. Our doxastic life is doomed to be a step ahead of these lessons, and there's no irrationality in this, just certain reflexive discomfort. Thank you.